Hey, good morning, good afternoon, whenever you're watching this, or even good evening. I know I got some night owls out there. Welcome back to the Bernie Miklas Show here on my YouTube channel. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends, family, whomever about us, and we continue to grow. And I very much appreciate your support, as I tell you every single day. I want to talk about Cardinals ownership and some related matters, if you will. John Mozeliak sat down with our friend Martin Kilcoyne of Fox 2 News in terms of an interview about what's happened, what comes next. And I would just encourage you to go to Fox 2 News and you can find that, or just enter Martin Kilcoyne's name and you can find it. Anyway, one thing Marty asked John Mozeliak is, you know, there continues to be consistent rumors that the team is going to be sold, or the team's for sale, or just is it for sale, basically, is the question. What do you know? So Mozeliak said, and I'll read the quote to you, quote, as you and I know, we've spoken about this offline, meaning talking to Marty, quote, but I think I would know if they were being sold, but I do not believe they're going to be sold. I hear the rumors as well. I recently spoke with Bill. I did not get any indication that this team was going to be sold again. I think he takes great pride in owning a baseball team, and I think he wants to continue to do so. So that's a quote. Listen, my point here today is not to tell you whether to believe it or not. You can be as skeptical as you want. You can predict that they're going to sell. You can tell me that you have sources here, sources there, the word on the street. All that. Listen, that's all good. It's fine. I'm not pushing back on any idea that there's a chance the team would be sold, because I've learned in the sports writing business, and in fact, I've learned in the sports casting business, I've learned from my own mistakes in terms of believing people and convinced that they were telling me the truth, and they weren't. This would apply to Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner. This would reply to our friend, sarcastically, Stan Kroenke. Stan Kroenke called me up one day and he was so angry. He was basically cussing me out because I kept talking about, don't trust this guy and he may move the Rams and he's got the escape clause. And Stan just picked up the phone and said, now, why would I do that? This really bothers me. You know, I'm a Missouri man. You know, I didn't help buy this team to bring it to St. Louis to move it. You know, I got family here. You know, all my in-laws come to the games. They love it. I don't know why this just keeps coming up. I'm not selling the team. Okay. I was pretty adamant. Went to dinner with Roger Goodell, not the name drop, because it's hardly anything to brag about. Went to dinner with Roger Goodell during Super Bowl week in Indianapolis. He wanted to know what I knew about the Rams. Stan Kroenke, the possibility of moving the Rams. And it's interesting because we compared notes and he says, well, who do I talk to there? And I said, well, you're friends with Dave Peacock already, so call him up because he knows everything that's going on in this city, the former Anheuser-Busch executive. So I said to Goodell at dinner, I said, well, listen, I know what the league's policy is. You want franchises to work out their problems where they are, and you don't want franchises to move. And he said, hey, that's exactly right. And he said, that team's not going to move. There's probably some things you got to take care of, but they're not going to move. And I said, I wish I could use the actual word that he said. I looked at him, and I'll never forget this. I said to Roger Goodell, I said, well, listen, doesn't the league benefit from having a team in L.A.? I mean, it's been kind of an embarrassment that the team doesn't have a team in L.A., or the league doesn't have a team in L.A. And he looked at me, and I'll never forget, he stared at me. It was almost like a glare, not at me, but just at the thought that they needed L.A. And he said, I'll use the word bleep. You can probably figure out what it is. He said, why in the bleep do we need a team in L.A.? I mean, he was like disgusted by the question. In follow-up conversations, it was made clear to me that the league strongly preferred the Rams stay in St. Louis. Kroenke's hollering at me on the phone because, I'm saying I don't trust it. And I thought, stupidly, you don't have to leave any comments calling me stupid. I'm calling myself stupid. I just took these guys at their word. Silly, old, naive, stupid me, right? But they were both so adamant, I had more trust that they would actually be ethical about this. Well, we all know what happened. Jerry Jones, a Dallas Cowboys owner, he sort of hijacked the whole process and strong-armed the league, strong-armed other owners in the supporting stand. Is the only chance we'll ever get a stadium in L.A. because he's paying for all of it, which is true. So they figure, well, we're going to have to basically screw St. Louis. The rest is history. So my point is, I'm just telling you a story, and anybody who thinks I don't admit to my own failings, well, here's another bit of evidence. I have no problem doing that. When I'm wrong, I'm wrong. When I've misjudged something, I have misjudged something. I ain't like one of these other people just like never admit, oh, no, I never said that. Oh, no, I don't know, you know. I don't do it. I mean, there's no point in being so insecure you can't own up to a mistake in judgment, you know, or any mistake, really. I'd rather have at least some character and avoid that kind of thing. So my point is, and I'll get back on track here, is that I have no idea about anything when it comes to will somebody sell a team or move a team or whatever. Only they know. You know, I have a good relationship with Bill DeWitt Jr., and I shouldn't even say that because every time I do, it's like, oh, Bernie's in the tank for Bill. No. If you've read me at all at scoopsnetwork.com or you've watched some of these videos here, I have criticized Bill DeWitt a ton, harshly so, about the way he let this thing slide, this beautiful franchise that he built with the help of some great people and this sustained success they had. They were a model franchise for a long time, and he let the thing slide. So I'm saying it again. It was his fault. It was his responsibility. I was extremely disappointed, the complacency, the borderline arrogance. And there's really no way to sit here and try to rationalize it. They screwed up big time. Ownership, the front office, the ownership support of the front office. And so I never hold back on what I want to say about anything. I also think, however, and this is where I'm going to use a Brian Wilson song from Pet Sounds. I just wasn't made for these times. The thing where I don't fit in today's culture is that even though, let's just say I rip Bill DeWitt for justifiable reasons and I rip him strong and I pretty much stay on it, right? I also think, though, I do have an obligation to be, I have an obligation to tell the truth and to be very frank and candid about it. And I don't compromise that, but I also think I have an obligation to try to be fair. So when I hear people carrying on about Bill DeWitt and the Cardinals and, you know, granted they let this thing get in bad shape and it's their fault and shame on them. But when I hear, you know, people just going so far overboard as if they never won or they never did anything, you know, this was all some kind of luck. And just trying to, I've said this in other videos, just trying to scrub history and erase it as if the Cardinals weren't a great team for a long dang time. I'm not going to go along with that. Okay. I'm not a member of a cult. I'm not going to go along with that. All right. As I've always said, criticize when warranted and praise when warranted and try at all times to be fair. I'm not saying I haven't failed in that regard. Of course I've failed. We're humans. I have too. I'm a human, believe it or not. So I don't know. I'm not making any predictions because people ask me all the time and they even misinterpret what I say. Which is like, I don't know, Bill DeWitt Jr. and Bill DeWitt III, believe it or not, they don't like let me in on family decisions or family thoughts or, hey, Bernie, we're going to have a meeting over here about selling the team. Would you like to come in and sit with us? No, that doesn't happen. Listen, I communicate with Bill DeWitt, and just like what John Mozeliak said, I have no suspicion the team's for sale right now. Things can change just like that time Stan Kroenke called me up, reaming me out because I had the audacity to doubt his loyalty to the city of St. Louis and the state of Missouri, right? Things can change quick. But I'm saying, as I sit here today, the first day in November, I'm not picking up any vibes at all from Bill DeWitt Jr. or anyone over there that they're for sale. I've told you this on the video, and those of you who remember the video or follow all the videos, and I'm going to repeat it. Bill DeWitt's really fired up about, again, I'll say it, you know, I can go till 9 o'clock tonight and say it over and over again, an endless loop. He screwed up. He screwed up. He screwed up. He screwed up. They got complacent. They got stale. They got outdated. He alone is responsible for that because he's the caretaker of the franchise, and he did not supervise the franchise to keep it at a high level. He let it deteriorate. Okay. And if you want, I'll say it again in a few minutes. But my strong sense of Bill DeWitt knows all this, and he's recharged by this hiring of Chaim Bloom, and Chaim Bloom going to rebuild the minor league player development system and get them totally up to speed after this thing completely fell apart. And I'm not talking about talent. They have talent in the minor leagues. Too many people continue to miss the point. Well, it's like they got this guy. I know they got some good players in the minor leagues. That's not the point. It's the system. It's the standards. It's the tools, the resources that they provide to their prospects. The Cardinals are lagging way behind in that. So their players who are aspiring major leaguers, going to be major leaguers, they don't have access to the vast array of tools and technology and coaching and instruction that I don't know how many, but just most major league franchises have for their prospects. But they do have talent, which makes it even more important to maximize the potential of that talent. Bill DeWitt hired Jeff Luhnow, as we know, in the aughts. I've talked about a lot, early aughts, and that worked out great because he brought him in to do exactly what he wants to do now again with Chaim Bloom. Once again, waited too long, delayed too long, never should have gotten to this state. Okay. But he is recharged because he likes player development. He likes draft development. A young nucleus of homegrown players. When the St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series in 2011, they had about 17 homegrown players on the roster throughout the year, 17. And it formed a lot of their nucleus, right? That's an example of what we're talking about. You grow your own and you get prospects to the major leagues, and you keep that steady supply coming. And then because they're all young players and they're not making the big money yet, it leaves you payroll space to go out and add what you need or to extend someone. Like, people forget that Albert Pujols, as a really young guy, signed a 10-year contract or something, or 8-year contract, something like that, for over $100 million. I think that was right. And if I'm screwing this up, see, the one time I don't look something up. But he signed a big deal that took him through 2011. And we saw DeWitt extend guys like, you know, Jim Edmonds. And there were so many other contracts. I don't want to get caught in the weeds here. But the model is, you get enough homegrown talent, it's going to give you great roster depth. It's going to give you really good players. You're going to be protected. And it gives you the payroll space to go out and do what you want. So he wants to get back to that. And I'm all in favor of that because I have a memory that goes back goes back longer than, say, I don't know, 18 minutes. I actually do remember Bill DeWitt buying the team and doing what he did to kind of revive what had been slipping in the final years of Anheuser-Busch, and slipping in terms of attendance as well. And so I can remember all that. So I know has in him to do it again. And I think he's really motivated to do it again. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's what I think sitting here today. So that doesn't sound like a guy's trying to sell the team or wants to sell the team. And again, I have no vibe whatsoever that's what's happening here, but we'll see. Big man here been lied to many times. All right. The one thing I will say, and I speak from experience, All the people, listen, you can say whatever you want. You want Bill DeWitt to sell, say that you want him to sell. I'm not going to push back on that, tell you you're wrong or you shouldn't feel that way. For those of you who insist that it's all like, oh, but a done deal or something, okay, I'm sure you have the most wonderful sources that exist. And then I'll be happy to tip my cap if you're right. I will just say this, sale or no sale, but if they're for sale, be careful. Be careful of what you wish for. I can speak from experience on a personal level, a fan level, a professional level. I just told you a story about the Rams and how the commissioner of the league looked me in the eye and with disdain that I would even say they needed a team in LA. You know, what the bleep do we need a team in LA for? Well, I think it was a good question, wasn't it? Even though the answer was a fib. For sure. At that time, I think maybe Goodell actually believed that. But then Jerry Jones, who kind of runs the league in a lot of ways anyway, at least he was back then, he took control of that situation. Be careful what you wish for. Now, if the Cardinals ever are for sale in my lifetime or yours, there's always a chance that someone would swoop in here and would be a fantastic owner, right? I'm not saying like if somebody would buy the Cardinals that it's doomed for failure and the person would be a horrendous owner. I don't know. How do we know? We don't know. But there's examples in sports of like guys have bought franchises that have been really successful and have a huge brand and all that. And at the time, you know, the people were all excited. This guy's perfect for us. And it turned out to be a disaster. If you don't mind, can I give you two examples? I already gave you Kroenke, but let me elaborate on that. When they were trying to get an expansion team, and Georgia, you know, Frontier was insecure about moving to St. Louis, we screwed up the expansion team because of the usual St. Louis all but fighting in the streets, the people wrestling for power. And the NFL said, boy, y'all don't have your house in order. We don't know who's even going to have the lease to the stadium because you're all fighting. So they bypassed St. Louis and went to Jacksonville for that second team. Charlotte was in there, the first choice. So, you know, I remember having conversations with John Shaw and Georgia Frontier when I heard that they were talking to Kroenke, who nobody knew who he was at the time. And Georgia told me, she said, this was an off-the-record conversation, the owner of the Rams in L.A. at the time. She told me, she said, I would love to move the team there, but I'm just nervous because even though it's my hometown, you know, it's not like I have a network of friends or support there, and I don't know the lay of the land, and it just makes me a little nervous. And she said, I wasn't going to move the team unless – I got to know Stan Kroenke and thought that he would be a great partner because that's his state and he's very loyal to it. He's very committed to it. And he's the ideal partner for me to have in this. And so she told me so many times she doubts, or was very, very doubtful or questionable she would have moved the team unless Kroenke bought 38, 40% of it at the time. And we all thought Kroenke would be, hey, this is great. You know, Georgia, if one day she wants to sell or, you know, or she has health issues, which unfortunately became, you know, the truth and she passed away and her children took over for a while, but because of tax issues, inheritance tax and all that, it was a mess. But we all thought that, you know, Kroenke was like maybe the perfect guy for this. Okay. And don't, none of y'all revise history because that was the truth at that time. Well, little did we know exactly how that would turn out, right? Stan telling me, oh, no, you think I would have helped move this team here only to move it out? How dare you? You know, okay. And you did what? But Georgia really believed like that gave her, it sort of emboldened her to move the team because she knew she had a Missourian who was a big deal in terms of wealth and his growth potential and everything else. And he was also very much, if you remember, those of you around, Stan Kroenke was very much hooked into civic progress and all the big corporate chieftains and everything else. So he was like part of the establishment in St. Louis. Now we know how it worked out. Things change. So that's one example. All right. Oh, because Stan Kroenke, perfect. I couldn't think of somebody better to take this thing over in a few years or whatever. I ain't one of the only ones saying it. I'll fess up to what I get wrong, but that was the overwhelming prevailing sentiment at the time locally. Can I go back to my own childhood? I grew up in Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. You know, my family had original Colts season tickets. The NFL said, well, yeah, we'll let you move buy the Dallas Texans and move them there, but you have to sell, it was either 7,500 or 10,000 season tickets by this date. And my Polish family, all my, you know, great uncles and my grandfather and father and cousins and generations of a Polish family bought about 30 or so season tickets in this ticket drive. And we had those tickets in our family in section 32 at the old Memorial Stadium. It was like two rows of us. We had those tickets from the before they moved until they actually moved again. So when Carol Rosenblum did this unusual thing, he swapped franchises with Robert Irsay. Robert Irsay bought the Colts. Carol Rosenblum had owned the Colts. Carol Rosenblum wanted to be in L.A. And so Irsay actually bought the Rams, and then as a prearranged deal, it's crazy, they swapped franchises. So Irsay gave up the L.A. Rams to come to Baltimore. He just thought it was more his kind of town, and the Colts were a huge brand back then. And Carl Rosenblum got what he wanted, which was the L.A. lifestyle. Bob Irsay, at first, he's like, hey, man, he's just like a regular guy. This is great. In his early first couple years as the owner, you know, you'd see like a commotion in the stands, and Irsay was in there sitting with, not in the rich people seats. He's in the upper deck. He's sitting with fans. He's like sitting in the middle of a row, and he's buying beer for everyone. He's ordering hot dogs. And little did we know at the time, you know, Bob Irsay liked to have some alcohol. That's a polite way to put it. And that's been well documented, so I'm not besmirching the man. I would call him at times, and his lawyer told me one time, listen, if you're ever going to try to call Bob in Chicago, you better get to him before like 9:30, 10 a.m., meaning after that, right? I had some experiences that reaffirmed that view. Anyway, so Bob Irsay looked like a man of the people. Look at him, man. He's born humbly. You know, he's air conditioning and heating magnet. You know, he built his own business. What he did was he actually stole it from his father. I got in touch with Irsay's mother one time, and she called him the devil on earth. How's that? That was a big story. How's that for an endorsement? She called him the devil on earth. I have nothing to do with him. And then she proceeded to tell me how he stole the family business from his own father. All right. So we thought Bob Irsay, oh man, man of the people. Look at him drinking beer. Man of the people. He moved the Colts after the 1983 season. Took my childhood away. Okay. So there's another. It's like, be careful what you want. At first, he looks good. Be careful what you want. Okay. I grew up in the Baltimore, D.C. area. As you know, I wasn't a Washington, quote, Redskins fan, but I had a lot of friends and people that I knew and coworkers who were. They loved that franchise, as they should have. The franchise under Jack Kent Cook was phenomenal. I don't want to recap all the success, but Joe Gibbs won 3 Super Bowls. It was exciting. That was one of the toughest tickets in sports. RFK Stadium, unbelievable place to watch football. The old school way, that place would shake. So when Jack Kent Cook passed away, his son John Cook, you know, took over for a while, and then he sold the team to Dan Snyder. Now, we all know who Dan Snyder is now. But Dan Snyder, at the time, it was like, oh, my gosh, this guy's the perfect guy. You know why? Because he grew up in, like, Bethesda, Maryland, close to D.C. He was a big-time Redskins fan. Like, it was his passion, his whole childhood. All he would do was watch the games and obsess over the Redskins, and it was his goal. He would tell his parents, you know, one day I'm going to own that team. And The super fan stuff was true. That was his background. He wasn't lying about it. He loved the Redskins. Perfect. Perfect guy to take this over. He's a local guy. He's one of us. He knows what it's like to put your heart and soul into this team. He would live and die from game to game because he cared so much. This is perfect. Dan Snyder was an absolute disaster, as you know. No need for me to review that. I'm already 25 minutes in. Absolute disaster. Peter Angelos in Baltimore when he bought the Orioles. I was long gone, but at first he's like, oh, here's another guy. He's East Baltimore, man. He made this incredible career out of nothing as a lawyer. He loves sports. He's the perfect guy for the Orioles. And it's good for a little while, and then he started doing silly things like firing John Miller, the great play-by-play man, because he thought Miller was too popular, and firing Dave Johnson, who was doing a great job as a manager. Then he stripped the thing down. I mean, it was a mess. And the Angelos family finally sold it to someone that's going to do a good job. Those are just, in my life, one, two, three, four examples, and there are more in sports. The guy out in Oakland, the guy, David Tepper, who bought the Carolina Panthers, he's a disaster. Oh, he's perfect. Oh, he's perfect. No, he wasn't. He's a disaster. And that story is all over professional sports. So be careful what you wish for. If the team is ever sold, yeah, there could be. We could get very, very fortunate. Oh, by the way, as we did in 1996, when Bill DeWitt and his partners bought the thing and went off with just this incredible success for a long time. You know, and I've talked to you about this before, but, you know, from 2000 through 2015, they led the National League and were second overall to the Yankees in regular season winning percentage. 11 postseasons in 16 years. They competed in the most postseason games of any team. They won the most postseason games of any team. They won four between 2000 and 2014. They won four NL pennants, two World Series. 9 times they were in the NLCS. And, of course, I've mentioned this before in a video. From 2000 through 2015, Busch Stadium, the previous one and the new one, the two Busch Stadiums hosted more postseason games than any National League team, and the two Busch Stadiums were the locations for just as many home postseason games, 60, as the two Yankee Stadiums. So over those 16 seasons, no franchise won more postseason home games than the Cardinals. The Redbirds, of course, Bill DeWitt let it all slide. And again, that was his fault. I think he's determined to do something about it. They're already doing something about it, or Hein Bloom wouldn't be here to rebuild the player development system. And I wanted to talk, if those of you used to listen to my radio show, you probably heard me talk about this because it was sort of a go-to reference. What happened with the Cardinals was the Cardinals got complacent. They built this huge successful model and they just assumed it would go on forever. And hey, we know what we're, and they did know what they were doing. They, Bill DeWitt was ahead of his time in terms of analytics and player development, different ways to scout, different ways to evaluate players to get better value for your dollar. All this payroll efficiency is a good thing, not a bad thing. I always use the BlackBerry example. I don't know if those of you who've been around a long time, you remember BlackBerry. Heck, I had one for years. Not anymore. Not when iPhone and other smartphones are having the market. So BlackBerry, the company's revenue in 2011 was just around $20 billion. But the iPhone became more and more popular and the sales plummeted. And just 5 years later, BlackBerry's revenue, which had been at $20 billion, was already down to $2 billion. And then there was one quarter where they had a $4.4 billion loss. And as all of this hemorrhaging was going on, the co-chief executive officer, this quote lives in infamy, just said, hey, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. And it was a disaster, and they let it happen because they were so successful with developing the BlackBerry that they thought, hey, we're geniuses. We know what we're doing. And the whole thing fell apart. And so the Cardinals, I said under Bill DeWitt, you know, it's the BlackBerry example. Just because you're great for a long time, it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. You have to be vigilant about staying up with the trends or staying ahead of the curve. And a lot of teams in Major League Baseball caught up with the Cardinals and passed the Cardinals in terms of being more advanced and more knowledgeable and just better at this, the new concepts of roster building and drafting and development and analytics and everything else, research departments. And so by the Cardinal standards, it kind of fell apart. Well, it did fall apart. You know, it's not like they've been an embarrassment to baseball, but from 2016 through 2024, they've won four postseason games. There's like a bunch of teams that have won more than that. They're 4-11 since then. So the BlackBerry example is one that we can apply to any successful business that gets complacent. But I personally don't think Bill DeWitt needs to sell. As I've said a million times, he doesn't need to sell the team. He needs to fix the team. I think he's trying to do that now. But I speak finally again. I speak from experience. You don't know who's going to come wandering in here if a team of ours locally is sold, right? You just never know. You might hit the jackpot. I think the Dodgers people are really happy that the big hedge fund manager took over and, you know, it's worth more money than whomever. And they don't care what they spend. They have an endless supply of revenue. And now they're tapping into the Japanese market. The money they're making in Japan on marketing deals is unbelievable. Yeah, you could get a dream owner, but you can also, as I have learned personally, professionally, you can also get a nightmare owner. And this is where I do push back a little bit. Again, I've got a pretty big platform, and I've been all over Bill DeWitt for letting this thing slide. But I don't forget how great it was and what he did for the baseball franchise and the baseball community and what he did for the fans and what the fans have done for him. So the relationship has been damaged. I think he wants to repair it. We're going to see. Because I don't trust anyone anymore. I've been burned too many times. But he seems pretty fired up to me, and that's a good sign. That's all I'll say. But be careful of what you wish for, those of you who think it'll be the salvation of the franchise if the DeWitt family sells. The DeWitt family and St. Louis baseball, it's actually been a really successful partnership. It's just that Bill DeWitt let it slide, and that's on him. Anyway, I'll shut up now. I had more. Believe me, I had more. But I got to telling some stories that were very much relevant, so I'll be quiet, okay? I'll get along with my business. You all have a great day. I might be back later to talk about the Cardinals pitching, their starting pitching in particular, after Thursday's moves with Lance Lynn and Gibson not picking up their options. You all have a great Friday. Until then, thank you for watching the Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube.